Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is July 24th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Dancing in the Street with a Legend of Emergency Medicine. And our guest skeptic, well, she does not need any formal introduction. It's Dr. Judith Tintinelli. Why doesn't she need to be introduced? Because she wrote the book on emergency medicine. So it's my great pleasure to welcome you to the SGEM, Judy.
Well, thanks, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here and not to talk a lot about Motown music, but we're having a heat wave at this part of the country.
It's like a heat wave.
Yep, 101. It's a real heat wave.
Well, this is another SGEM Extra called Legends of Emergency Medicine. And these summer episodes are highlighting some of the pioneers and leaders of our specialty. My hope is that these episodes will give the next generation of emergency physicians access to some of the superstars in our field. Judy, the SGEMers know you as the doctor who wrote the book on emergency medicine. But tell us something non-medical about Judy Tintinelli.
You know, it's hard to talk about yourself, and it sounds semi-stupid, but I will, since you invited me to. Well, I'm a Pisces. That's my astrologic sign. So I do all things water. I whitewater raft, I kayak, I paddleboard, and I swim. And I continue all those things now as often as I can do it. I suppose the real secret is I can't use the word accomplished, but I used to be an accomplished pianist starting at age 4 till about age 15. And I played the piano. My teacher wanted me to be a performance artist. And at 14, I had my own concert. And that, of course, convinced me I got performance anxiety, and I didn't want to do that. And at that time, I was already practicing 4 to 5 hours a day. And I'm like, God, what a life. So I traded the M in music for the M in medicine.
Now, I notice a little accent in your voice, and I want to think it's Michigan, but you're calling from North Carolina. Can you explain that?
Well, it's because I'm from Michigan, grew up in Michigan, and my professional career started at Wayne State University in Detroit and then at Detroit Receiving Hospital.
Now, you picked Dancing in the Street for this episode. Can you explain why you picked that song?
Well, it's one of my favorites. I also jog or run, you know, according to my abilities. And that's one of my favorite songs because the beat is just right for the speed that I do. But, you know, that's a Motown record or Motown group. And it's like fiery hot, just like emergency medicine. Crazy, crazy, like practicing and starting emergency medicine was in those early days in Detroit. So it's very much a part of me, that whole kind of environment.
Now, you said fiery and hot, and the version you picked was by Martha and the Vandellas. But, you know, I'm stuck in the 80s, so I was more familiar with the Mick Jagger, David Bowie version.
Okay, Tokyo, South America.
Oh, ick. No, mine is the original. It's the same time span as things were happening in Detroit. Of course, there were the Detroit riots, too. Remember that. So,
well, speaking of remembering, do you remember where we first met?
I do. It was at Boston ASAP. I was looking at the posters, and I was captivated by a poster done by your son. And then you guys both came up and explained to me who your son was. I met him, met you. That was the very first time.
Yeah, it was very exciting for both of us. He was presenting his grade 10 science fair project in 2014 on a new pediatric resuscitation device. And then I saw you walk by and I'm like, oh, Ethan, you've got to meet Dr. Judy Tintinelli. Did you have any initial impressions of me or my son?
Your son was way taller than you were. And yeah. He looked very, very smart. Is he there at the lake with you today?
He is not with me at the lake today. He's up at summer camp working for the summer, but he has grown, and he has grown all the way up to 6'10". So he towers over both of us.
He is tall. That's my remembrance, and I'll imagine him mentally is even taller.
Well, we did meet again since then, and that was when we did a Bat Dog video together in Costa Rica, and I have to admit, it was pura vida.
That was funny, because we tripped over each other, guess what area, looking at posters. I like to look at posters because they sort of tell you what people are into and what's important to them clinically. And there you were again, wearing your bat costume. It took me a while to figure out who you were.
It was funny because there was a whole bunch of young emergency physicians, and I believe they were all women, and they all gathered around you and wanted to get a picture with you. So I, of course, offered to take the picture. And then after that, I said, well, would you do a Bat Dog video? And you were gracious enough to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't interested in you, Ken. I have to tell you that.
No, they were totally interested in you. I'm going to post a copy of the Bat Doc video on the blog, but that's enough reminiscing. Let's get to the formal part of this SGEM Extra. Legends of Emergency Medicine. And we're going to go through 5 questions to find out from you as a thought leader, an innovator, a disruptor of emergency medicine. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right, number 1, what's the biggest positive change you've seen in emergency medicine over your career?
You know, I was thinking about this question, and actually I'm giving a talk next week in Mackinac Island, Michigan, back very close to my roots, and I had asked a lot of my colleagues this same question. I thought it was very interesting, because you know what they all said to a person? CAT scans. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm talking about in emergency medicine. The biggest change, first of all, is respect. We don't have to fight for it. We've got it. We're recognized as a specialty. The second change is really autonomy. And our autonomy as specialists has led to the recognition and the practice and the perfection of sets of skills that are unique to our specialty. So we've finally achieved a lot of the things that really make us a real specialty. At the very beginning, we weren't exactly a specialty. We were a group of people that worked in a little box called the ER. But the biggest change are those 3 things: respect, the autonomy, and the development of a unique set of skills, like POCUS, like procedural sedation, lots of other things that have made us a true specialty.
I'm really sensing a theme here. You are pure Michigan, because the thing that you're mentioning is R-E-S-P-E-C-T, respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take F-T-C-T.
Maybe I should have picked that song. Doesn't have the right beat for running, though.
Well, question number 2, what's the biggest negative change, the thing that you don't really like seeing happen in emergency medicine over your career?
Well, I'm going to give you 2 unfortunate things. Everybody, well, one of them was in the New York Times today. You know, our listeners may not be familiar with that, but the other one was in the news all over the place. It was the Akron City fiasco and the USACS takeover of an emergency medicine residency. I mean, for me to imagine that that could happen, resulting in what is now the closure of a residency, both in emergency medicine and caps on other residencies in the hospital, as well as the loss of a residency director and faculty. It takes years and years to develop individuals that are of scholarly caliber. and just go in and throw them out at the whim of a medical group makes you realize how vulnerable we are and how some of the things about emergency medicine and working together aren't always as operative now as they used to be. So that's one bad, bad fiasco. And of course, it hit the papers. It's not exactly a positive reflection on our specialty. The other thing today that is a very negative, again, piece of information was in the New York Times today. They described a corporate group that took over a small rural hospital in the Northwest United States and showed graphs of how the billing went up from 6%, they call it the highest level of care. I'm assuming that could be a level 5 or critical care, I'm not sure, now to 28%, and that group is out of network. That's, again, front page negative news about emergency medicine. This is, of course, U.S. brand. It's not Canadian brand emergency medicine, unfortunately. So I don't know if I should call it a change, but it's certainly negativism, and we're seeing more and more of that about our specialty in the newspapers. That's bad enough. That's real. But we still keep taking the blame for a lot of other things that aren't our fault. But all this gives you kind of a little black cloud around the specialty.
Well, let's pivot from the negative to something positive again. And this question is about your contribution and what you're most proud of. And the most obvious thing, of course, is the textbook. But I'm interested, what will you say is the thing that you're the most proud of that you've contributed? And I want to put in so far, because you're not done yet.
I think if I have a lot of things that I feel had made a difference, but deep down, I just love clinical work. I love being a doctor. I really enjoy teaching clinically. And we always have to remember, there's a lot of stuff about blogs and posts and books. But the vast majority of a resident or student's time that's valuable, that's learning time, is at the bedside. And so if I've helped a couple of people, a couple of patients in that regard, I think I'm most proud of that. There are other official things that were pretty important, kind of things that most people don't know about. Do you want me to mention those, or?
Yeah, pull back the curtain and tell us something interesting that people will not know about you.
Or are you bored with
them? I'm enthralled.
I was chairman of the LREC, the Liaison Residency Endorsement Committee, which was the forerunner of the RRC in emergency medicine. And I happened to be chairman at the time when we had the greatest increase. We just about tripled the number of ER residencies in a short span of about 3 years during the time I was chairman. But our big decision then was, do we really, really want to go under the ACGME and perhaps be subject to a lot of stupid rules that organized medicine imposes upon us? And of course, there was no choice. Of course, we had to go with it. But I look today at all the rules and the regulations, you know, there was some truth to our hesitancy about joining organized medicine. We had to do that to get respect. So that was really one thing. And then the LREC, I was an early member, and the guys before me had started making the foundations of residency training. But you know what's pretty amazing is most of the key things that were developed then are still the key things that are present now in our programs. And I think that's a pretty good thing to leave behind for the future residents. I also started CORD, Council of Emergency Medicine Residency Directors, because I had moved from the LREC to And then no longer was on the committee when it was the RRC. And suddenly, as a group of residency directors, we're like, hey, man, we're being pushed around. Nobody's asking us things. They're making us do things. Nobody's asking our opinion. So there was a general kind of rabble-rousing meeting of all the residency directors and associate directors, and I can't remember what city that was in. And by acclamation, the group said, Judy, come up. We need to be an organization. Make us an organization. I'm like, oh, my God. I had to get up to the front of the room, and I said, okay, we're going to call us the Council of Emergency Medicine Residency Directors. Got a group to help me, and off we went with the beginning of CORD. And it's wonderful to see how CORD has developed into a really sophisticated group of educators.
See, I think this is just fascinating because, of course, I think most people know you as the person who wrote the book, and yet there is so much more to you, and it's not one of the things that you first went to say that you were proud of. The first thing that you said you were proud of was that clinical teaching and that personal contact with the learner. And I think, as an educator myself, that's inspiring.
Well, I think so many of us who are in emergency medicine, that's where our greatest satisfaction is. It's really in the clinical work and trying to at least make a difference to a patient, their family, when they're in a very vulnerable position.
So now I'm going to ask the fourth question, and that's sort of giving advice to those in medical school, because I do have people that listen to the SGEM that are in medical school, and they're thinking, emergency medicine, I think that's going to be the career for me. That's why I'm listening to this podcast. What advice would Judy Tintinelli give those young students looking to go into emergency medicine?
Well, if you think back to how most of us made our decisions to go into the field of medicine, to apply for medical school, you know, unless your dad was a doctor and you helped him in his office, and very few of us, you know, had that opportunity, certainly I did not, we didn't know that. We're just like, oh, man, medicine, yeah, I like that. I'm going to do it. And we applied, and we went through 4 years of medical school. Even the first few years didn't really tell us what it was like to be a doctor. But somehow the whole idea resonated with us. So I think for students interested in emergency medicine, I probably just say, just do it. You like it? Do it. I do try to make sure they know the difference between liking a rotation and liking a specialty that they're going to be in probably for the rest of their professional lives. But there is something about the field, if you're a rapid decision maker, if you don't like clinical care in the clinic, if you like doing things right away and moving on to the next thing, that's what the personality is of an emergency physician. You can be thoughtful too, but you have to think fast and you have to think on your feet. So if you're that kind of person, emergency medicine's probably for you.
Well, the last question I wanted to ask you needs you to put on some special goggles and time travel. I want you to move forward 10 years and say, what's emergency medicine going to look like?
Well, we need to do some thinking preparation as a specialty for what we want to be like. I think the first thing we need to do over the next 10 years is restart the fire. You know, the beginning of emergency medicine, I'll tell you, it was just wonderful. It was heady. We got to do all kinds of things, did things by our bootstraps, got involved. We have to think of ways of lighting the fire over the next 10 years. And our residents now don't have any idea of what it was like at the very beginning and how exciting it was. So we need to start that excitement again, draw people into committees, institutions, their own hospital, and realize that one person can really make a difference. In terms of the future, that is hard to predict. If you know, the big thing now is observation medicine and hospitalist medicine. Ron Crome at Detroit Receiving Hospital had set up a 22-bed observation unit in the ER. That was like in the 1970s. So sometimes things that started a long time ago go around the circle and become thought of as new and innovative things. I think emergency medicine needs to look at new ideas and new procedures that we can do, that we can take over. We're the only people who are there 24/7. A good colleague of mine is working on 3D ultrasonography. We should be the ones who are going to be doing that, not the radiologists years from now. We should probably be doing more telemedicine, more work with EMS to try to keep people in nursing homes out of the ED. It's kind of funny that our specialty started by treating people in the ED, and now we're a little bit focused on keeping them out of the ED, but all that can be beneficial for emergency medicine as a specialty if we do it all.
Well, if you're a resident, you have now heard it from Judith Tintinelli. She wants to light a fire inside your belly so that you can create the next 10 years of emergency medicine and make it just as, and I think the term was, heady as the days that you experienced back in the 1970s.
Yep, that would be great.
Well, is there anything else that you want to discuss before we sign off this episode of Legends of Emergency Medicine?
Well, it's wonderful to be invited to something like this, Ken, and I can only say I'm happy it's pre-humus, not post-humus.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the SGEM and sharing your story. Here is one of the final things. As a legend of emergency medicine, can you give the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine tagline?
Remember, be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.